Coming up on Chasing the Natty, spring camp news has been hard to come by this year, but that hasn't stopped us from digging where we can and bringing you new developments and names to consider in your college fantasy drafts. Today, I'll be providing some rapid analysis to spring camp stories all over the country, from everything from key quarterback battles to transfers to breakout players. I have all of that and more coming right after this.
Picks his way to the right and is tripped up, reaching for the end zone. Touchdown. What a start.
Give it to Reed, and there he goes. Nobody's going to catch him. Touchdown.
It's caught. Jeremiah Smith. Touchdown, Ohio State. The legend grows.
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in, everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Wednesday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us in all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the season at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we do here, head on over to campusofcanton.com and subscribe there with any of our phenomenal tiers. We have content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it's CFF, Devy, C2C, College IDP, College DFS, Underdog Fantasy. If you play it, then we've got content, whether that's tools, rankings, pretty much everything you need to succeed. In fact, right now, if you want to support the show even further, make sure when you sign up for one of our yearly membership tiers, you use that promo code NATTY, N-A-T-T-Y, to get 10% off of your yearly membership. Again, that is promo code NATTY, N-A-T-T-Y. If you can't do that, you can just show us some love by leaving a like, a comment, and a subscribe on the YouTube side of things. If you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you leave a 5-star review. Make sure you're following the show. Not only does that show us support, but also just the game of college fantasy football in general, some support. If you have any further questions or want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me in the show on Twitter. I'm at @CFF_Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty. All right, guys, we are back here another week here in April now. I missed the chance to say end of March here. We're now already into April, which is crazy how quickly this offseason's going by. But I think for me, a lot of that has to do with a lot of life changes happening to me, which is something I want to kind of get off my chest here at the start of this show here today. I appreciate each and every one of y'all out there for being patient with me over the last couple of months. This isn't the first time that I've moved while doing this show. Between college and everything, I've moved around quite a bit actually since starting this show. I think I'm now on home number 4 doing this show. I'm definitely in office number 4 doing this show, because I think I started all the way back in my senior year of college, and I've since been in 2 apartments, and now I'm officially in my home, which I hope to have for many, many years to come. I am obviously loving it. But it has taken a lot out of me, a lot more than I really thought it was going to. Like, this whole moving process into this home has taken a lot more out of me than I thought it would over these last couple of months. And so with the inconsistent schedules and everything like that, I haven't been as attentive on Twitter as I normally have been on Discord and stuff like that. So to each and every one of you out there listening who have been patient with me and are still obviously supporting us, I want to thank you guys so, so much. And again, thank you again for supporting me this week, as I could not get this show out on Monday as we normally do. But here I am doing a solo pod here later this week, because I do want to get you guys some great stuff out there. I want to make sure that you guys are caught up with everything. Obviously, we as a CFF community have tons of guys out there now doing great, great work. I'll give some shout outs here to start this show. Two in particular that have been fantastic. The G5 Hive has been phenomenal. A lot of people have been asking me, like, oh, Jared, how do you keep up with spring news and everything? Like, what accounts do you follow and everything? Obviously, some of the accounts that we have been using in the past aren't as active anymore. But one account that I know for a fact is active is the G5 Hive. And especially if you're looking for those hidden G5 gem stories and everything like that, just follow them. They retweet tons of beat writers and their stories. Literally, they made it so easy for me to put this show together today because I was literally just able to go through their feed and make sure I'm not missing anything major. So shout out to the G5 Hive guys. Another guy that obviously deserves shout outs is Volume Pigs. Not only does he do great in-depth looks at different players, but he does monthly, I think he did two recaps this past month where he just lists everything. And I'm not going to sit here and say that I just looked at his recap and created a show from it, but I'm not going to not say I didn't go through that recap at the end just to, again, make sure I didn't miss anything major. Because, again, he does such a thorough job. So Justin Leo over at Volume Picks, fantastic work he's been doing. Also, shout out Purple Rain. You can find his stuff at Let Purple Rain on Twitter and on YouTube. He has been doing a phenomenal job. I'll be joining him on his show this week. He has been doing some real good in-depth looks at systems the last several weeks. So if you want to go and check that out, absolutely go and do that. So what am I talking about here today? Well, if you're watching this and if you're listening to this, you've likely seen the title where, again, today I'm just going to go through some spring news, right? Again, unfortunately, just didn't have time to put together graphics. So this is going to be very much a podcast-centric episode today. So if you're on YouTube, you're just going to be looking at my face the entire time here. But again, I'm just going to go through some kind of rapid-fire stuff. I'm not going to try to go too in-depth on a lot of stuff and everything. Just kind of giving you guys a quick recap over a lot of news stories that, you know, some obviously pretty major, but then some other ones that have kind of been flying under the radar a little bit that I found interesting. So take a look at it all. We got some coaching changes. I'll go through the transfer portal news because we got both of those things still going on, believe it or not. And then after that, I'll kind of dive into some camp news, kind of dividing it up between, like, you know, quarterback news, running back news, wide receiver news from there. With all that being said, I think we can go ahead and hop right into it. We'll start with the coaching changes here. And we've got three of them. It's kind of crazy that we're, you know, a good chunk of the way through spring camp and everything, and we're still dealing with coaching changes all over. Probably, obviously, the major one comes out west at Stanford, where Troy Taylor was placed on administrative leave due to his treatment of female staffers. He is now out, and he has been replaced by Frank Reich, who obviously there is some connection there between Andrew Luck, who is the GM of Stanford, and Frank Reich, who was the former head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. Got to be some history there. Obviously, or not obviously, I personally think that this is a really good hire by Stanford. This is apparently going to be a one-year deal here, and I think Frank Reich, considering he's not coaching anywhere else right now, I think he's a perfect stopgap for Stanford. If he works out really well, why not extend him? You got a former NFL coach on the staff. That's obviously going to attract a lot of people to come to your school, outside of the fact that Stanford, you know, obviously is one of the premier academic institutions in the country. But that's kind of the question, right? Like, what happens to the talent here, right? Not only the players they'll bring in the future, but the players they already have, right? Obviously, David Bailey was a big-time outside linebacker that Stanford have. He's already in the portal, and now everybody's kind of waiting on the shoe to drop, right? Particularly with Emmett Mosley, the wide receiver that has been going very high in drafts this past year. He's currently going wide receiver 6 in ADP, coming off on average at the, you know, second pick of the third round, right? He's a very talented guy. Like, his end of season was great last year, you know, averaging over 10 yards per catch. He was getting double-digit targets in multiple games towards the end. Very clearly, Mosley, with Elik Iemanaorga gone, will be the major guy there at Stanford. It's just a matter of, can he now survive the spring portal? I personally think there's a better chance than some people are kind of giving credit for. I think people are kind of almost, I think it is written in pen that Mosley will transfer out. But like I mentioned before, like, Luck and Stanford was able to land a former NFL coach here. That's going to get some of these guys to pause and say, like, hey, like, we've seen Frank Reich do some things at the NFL level. He can help us get to the next level. So I wasn't drafting Mosley already. I personally thought he was already going too high. Now I'm really kind of off just because of the risk of him transferring and, you know, you having to rely on him landing at a decent spot there. But I'm personally not treating him as if it's like a guarantee that he's going to transfer. Some other coaching changes here. We got two in the MAC here. The first one is that Kenny Burns the head coach over at Kent State, the Kent State Golden Flashes there. He has been placed on administrative leave. The word is that Burns was, you know, dealing with some banking issues. So now he is placed on administrative leave. The word is that he was still handled some of the off-the-field administrative stuff, but I'm not really sure how that's going to work out. But currently, offensive coordinator Mike Carney, not to be confused with the Prime Minister of Canada, Mark Carney is currently handling all the on-field stuff, right? So even if Burns is placed on an administrative leave, it seems like that Carney is kind of expected to be taking over as a role. It doesn't seem like they're going to be hiring from outside, at least for this upcoming year. Not that I was really expecting any massive CFF players getting involved here at Kent State, but if you're like me and Volume Pigs, you've definitely been intrigued by the Jordan Newbin transfer. Obviously, this feels like Kai Thomas 2.0 here, where, you know, former Minnesota running back transfers to Kenny Burns and his system. You hope that connection turns him into a bell cow back. Didn't really work out for us last year with Kai Thomas only getting 135 carries and not even hitting 550 yards on the year. But also, I think a lot of that has to do with Kent State just being really bad last year. Problem is, they could be really bad again this year. But I do believe in Newbin just a little bit more, right? He got some pretty extensive run in 2023. He carried the ball 127 times for 559 yards and 3 touchdowns when Darius Taylor went down for a time. He's a pretty explosive guy. I think that Newbin can thrive at the MAC level. It's just a matter of, is Kent State even good enough? So we'll see. But obviously with Burns out of the picture here, I don't know if that connection with Newbin and Burns even matters anymore. Obviously Carney was willing to bring in Newbin, and he's obviously heavily involved in the offense. So my hope is that whatever they were planning on doing with Newbin is still the plan going forward. But, you know, with these coaching changes, it's always hard to kind of see. Last coaching change to discuss here is Mr. Eddie George being hired at Bowling Green. Bowling Green's former head coach heading off to a positional role in the NFL. So Eddie George being hired here at Bowling Green is kind of a fun hire. Obviously, a former player turned head coach here. It's always great to see. Went back and looked at Eddie George's time at Tennessee State over the last 4 years. Just kind of get an idea as to what kind of systems he'd been running there. And quite frankly, the first 3 years were an absolute mess. It wasn't really until George's final year here at Tennessee State where he hired Travis Partridge to be his offensive coordinator. And that's where things seem to have finally gotten figured out. And that's where I got pretty interested in Travis Partridge. He, I think, is running the show here. There's a pretty substantial change in the quality of offense once Partridge became the OC at Tennessee State. He now follows George to Bowling Green here. Obviously a very smart move on George's part. Bring the guy with you that's fixed your offense. And Partridge has a pretty interesting history, particularly his wide receiver one. His wide receiver one has averaged 99 targets, 62 receptions, 892 yards in a 12-game season the last 3 years that he has been the both offensive coordinator at Tennessee State, and then before that, the passing game coordinator at UT Martin. Obviously, that's not a play-calling role, but clearly he had a heavy influence on what that system was for UT Martin, and the common theme here has been the number one wide receiver under Partridge, whether he is a coordinator or a passing or a full offensive coordinator or a passing game coordinator, his number one guy gets peppered with targets. The last 2 years, it's been the slot guy. His first year at UT Martin, it was an out wide guy. So I'm not really ready to say that this is a full system play. This could very well just be, hey, let's get our best receiver that many targets. So you might be asking me, Jared, well, you keep telling me that this is a pretty interesting spot for a wide receiver. Who do I target? Well, unfortunately for all of y'all, I don't really have a great answer because I was kind of intrigued with Malcolm Johnson because I thought he had another year of eligibility, but he is gone according to C2C Winning Edge's returning production database, which, by the way, is available now over at Campus Kent. If you get the C2C Winning Edge tier, it is my go-to place to know who is back and who is not. Nick does a fantastic job putting all that together, so go check that out. So with Malcolm Johnson out of the way, right, it really only leaves Rakeem Smith and Vim Hogan, both of whom had between 25 and 35 targets last year, both of whom had between 180 and 350 yards last year. Like, neither one of them really big-time wide receivers for the Falcons last year. And they both kind of played a balanced role, which makes it kind of hard to really kind of pinpoint which guy's going to be playing in the slot, which guy's going to be playing out wide. Like I said before, that may not matter at all. The other name that's kind of intriguing here is Arliss Boardingham. And now, I can hear some of you guys rolling your eyes a little bit, right? Because here's the thing. You look at Partridge's tight ends over the last 3 years, they've averaged 33 targets, 20 catches, 232 yards, and about 3 to 4 touchdowns in the last 3 years. Those 3 to 4 touchdowns are nice, don't get me wrong, but like everything else, right? Pretty clear this isn't a system that you target for a tight end. The only reason why I'm bringing up Boardingham's name is, like I said before, I'm not entirely sure if this is a case where Partridge is just peppering targets to his best receiver downfield. And I do think there is room for Boardingham to potentially be the best receiving option still for this team, even if, you know, there's not the guaranteed system like there was before under Loeffler. So I'm just throwing that back out there. Like, obviously, Boardingham has taken a huge hit in drafts since the coaching change here. Deservedly so, obviously. But, you know, I'm still going to keep him in my rankings because I do think there is an outside chance that he could still end up being the receiver one for this team. But we'll see how all that plays out. So those are the three coaching changes. Again, just recapping. Troy Taylor out of Stanford, replaced with Frank Wright. Kenny Burns off on administrative leave at Kent State there. Offensive coordinator Mark Carty is currently handling all the on-field stuff. And then Scott Loeffler out at Bowling Green, and Eddie George is in to replace him with his offensive coordinator, Travis Partridge, in my opinion, being the more interesting name to watch there over this next coming year. So, the coaching changes out of the way. Let's take a look at some of these spring portal entrants so far. Obviously, the actual spring portal window has not opened up. That will not open up until most teams have had their spring game and their spring practices wrapped up. But we have already gotten a couple of pretty decently huge names in here. Probably the biggest one with recruiting pedigree has to be Micah Hudson, the former five-star wide receiver out of Texas, who went to Texas Tech for a year, entered the portal, went to Texas A&M. Sounds like there was some drama with him and his girlfriend. He no longer wants to be at Texas A&M. The likely answer is that he's probably going to return to Texas Tech, although, again, as a former five-star wide receiver, I don't think we can really root out the possibility of him going elsewhere. I think Miami is a team to probably watch here if they really do think that they're not loving their options in that slot position. Definitely something I'll want to talk with Joe Arpaese on his show later this week when we talk Miami. But I think Hudson going back to Texas Tech would obviously intrigue a lot of people. Although, that receiver room is getting very crowded between Douglas, between Virgil, and between Eakin over there. I'm not sure exactly how to read that room going forward. Another big time former recruiting pedigree, although this guy's long lost his luster, is John Emery Jr. is entering the portal. This was pretty funny in the fact that like he announced greatly, like, I have one more year. Turns out I'm coming back. And if you read some of the interviews with the coaches, they basically said like, that's great. We'll support you, buddy, but we're kind of good at running back, which is crazy because LSU, you know, they have some good guys at running back, right? Obviously, Caleb Durham's a beast, but like, once you get past that, it kind of gets pretty iffy pretty quickly. And they still said to John Emery, like, we're good, buddy. I don't think it matters where Emery goes. I don't think he'll be a factor this year. A former favorite of CFF has entered the portal, and that is Richard Reese. I am putting my hands together and praying to the Lord above that this man goes to a small school. Please, I am begging you. Reese was obviously great back in his freshman year. He had 198 attempts for 972 yards and 14 touchdowns on the ground for Baylor in 2022, I believe that year was. Problem is, Reese is great and all, but he's 5'9", 181 pounds. We should have probably known that that was not a frame built to stick as a bell cow in the Big 12. Like I said, I'm hoping for a transfer down here. I think he would absolutely kill it at a, you know, like a Sun Belt or an ACC, or excuse me, not ACC, an AAC school. We'll see how that turns out. Another guy that's entered the portal is Harrison Whaley. This one's kind of interesting to me, right? Because it seemed like that Whaley was set to come back and have his final hurrah for Wyoming this year. And then now suddenly, before the portal even opens, he's announcing he's going in, right? So that tells me one of two things. Either some school came along and offered him some money to come be, you know, RB2, RB3, and he said, screw it, it's my last year, might as well get the bag. Or I think the other possibility here is that, you know, him being injured most of last year, him coming back and kind of getting injured again towards the end of the season, I wonder if the staff told him that he probably wasn't going to be a bell cow back this year because they don't trust him to stay healthy. And he said, I'm going to go see if I can find another school that's going to give me basically a second diagnosis, right? So we'll see how that goes. But I'm personally not expecting Whaley to land anywhere that, you know, strikes a ton of interest with me. I'll keep it going with the running backs here. I was about to jump to a wide receiver, but I'll probably finish up with the running backs here. Freddie Brock. Freddie Brock is obviously somebody we had an eye on last year at Georgia State after his massive bowl game. Very much became a pretty committee approach there. He's entered the portal. That tells me a couple of things. One, I was interested to see what kind of schools Brock would start visiting. Would he be looking for a place where he could start and potentially be a bell cow, or is this another situation of a G5 back going to a Power 4 school just to kind of be a backup, get some money, that kind of deal? Glad to hear, for the most part, it seems like he is actually looking for opportunity. If you look at his list of schools that he's been visiting, he visited Temple on the 28th of March. He visited Sam Houston on the 31st of March. Visited UMass. He visits UMass tomorrow. He'll visit Western Kentucky later this week. He's also got a visit set for Oklahoma State. All of these, except for really Oklahoma State, strike me as Brock's looking for an opportunity to be the clear guy. Which is interesting because you would have thought that he would have been the lead back at Georgia State, but that tells me some of those young running backs they are bringing in, particularly one freshman that stood out to our recruiting team this year. Seems like they're making some noise over there, and Brock got the heck out of Dodge. Between the four teams that I kind of brought up at the G5 level, I think the most interesting to me would be Western Kentucky. Say what you will about Western Kentucky running backs the last several years, but under Rick Bowie last year, we did see Sam Hicks go 96 yards a game, a touchdown a game just last year. And if you look at Western Kentucky, man, that running back room is pretty bare. So I think if Brock did go there, I'd put him in my rankings and I'd be drafting him towards the end of drafts, just with my fingers crossed that he would kind of fill that Sam Hicks role that Bowie had going on last year. And then obviously the probably lackluster option here is for Brock to go to Oklahoma State. That's already a room that I don't really love any of the options there. And I don't think Brock is the answer to really supersede any of those guys there. I think he would just become another cog in the machine over there. So a couple of wide receiver news in the transfer portal. Jack Castera, the guy that I was kind of pointing out at Utah State, that could be very interesting. Of course, literally the week after I tout him, he is in the portal. And in terms of where he could go, I think the two interesting options would be either does he follow Blake Anderson to Southern Miss, or does he follow his wide receiver coach there to Cal? I don't think either one leads to a guaranteed situation. In fact, I'd rather probably go to Cal because I actually think there's less known about that wide receiver room versus like Southern Miss. There's like a ton of options. I kind of mentioned this before that it's that wide receiver room is a very interesting turf war between the guys that Charles Huff brought in and then the guys that formerly worked with Blake Anderson and that are being brought in. I have no clue how that wide receiver room is going to shake out, and I doubt Hestera going into it is going to make it any clearer. One wide receiver, though, that found himself a new transfer landing spot here. I just kind of flew under the radar. I almost missed this. But that is Georgia wide receiver Ra-Ra Thomas landing at Troy. Again, this is pretty intriguing because we as the CFF community have not really named an heir apparent to Devontae Ross at Troy. And, you know, there's some good reason there, right? Like, one, Peyton Higgins is the only productive receiver returning from last year, and he had only 47 targets for 32 receptions, barely under 300 yards and a touchdown. He also plays in the slot. Devontae Ross was outside. It's also pretty clear that Ross was playing at a level higher than the rest of his competition. He was an absolute monster last year. And so there's definitely the question of, you know, was that a system play? Was it just the outside guy in Gerard Parker's system going to get fed, or was Ross just that much better? I personally lean towards Ross was just that much better. But Troy landing Ra-Ra Thomas, I do think is pretty interesting, right? Troy's in pretty big need of someone on the outside. Like I said, I don't think I'm ready to call this a system play, considering, you know, Gerard Parker's time at West Virginia didn't really feature a true number one guy there. But if Devontae Ross was good enough to dominate at this level and then move up now to the Power Four, who's to say that a Power Four transfer, who, in my opinion, if you look at his stats at Mississippi State and UGA, hasn't really been that bad. Like, you know, he's averaging, you know, 14.2 yards per catch, 16.7 yards per catch at UGA. Like, he was pretty solid. Granted, again, he didn't get a lot of run at UGA, but that's just UGA wide receivers in general. I think he's got plenty of talent. I do think he can dominate at the Sun Belt level. I think, and this is possibly my Georgia bias talking here, but, like, I'm kind of in on Thomas. If he stays at a decent value here, right? Like, I'm honestly scared to say his name right now because I'm eyeing him in a draft right now. Then I'm in the, you know, last 10 rounds of a draft right now. I'm kind of hoping it makes it back to me before this show releases tomorrow because I kind of want to pick up Ra-Ra Thomas here. So, again, do I expect, you know, top 10 wide receiver like Devontae Ross was last year? Probably not, but, you know, I could absolutely see Ra-Ra, again, being a guy to monopolize targets in this system yet again here, especially with the same quarterback, same offensive coordinator coming back for Troy. We'll definitely see. Let's actually get into some real spring news now, like your typical, you know, your typical traditional type of spring news, beat reporters going into practice, jotting down what notes they can, getting cryptic messages from coaches and all that great stuff. We'll start with some quarterbacks here. And we got two quarterback rooms that I definitely want to give a take a look at here. One we already kind of knew we were looking at going into the spring, but then one that I think's kind of flown under the radar, I'll start with that one here. And that's the Charlotte quarterback room. I actually was considering detailing this quarterback battle in an upcoming article in which I take a look at some under-the-radar battles at all positions across the country. But the Charlotte quarterback room is kind of interesting to me, right? Because if you look at Tim Elbin's history, his dual-threat quarterbacks have been monsters, right? Again, think about guys like Parker Navarro last year. Before that, Nathan Rourke was absolutely dominant in this system. So I was kind of surprised that nobody's really been talking about this quarterback battle going on at Charlotte as much. And well, we got some word from Charlotte's offensive coordinator Todd Finch here about this ongoing quarterback battle. And I will note that, first of all, this quote comes from Hunter Bailey, and what he was able to ask Todd Finch. And Todd Finch's quote was this: Connor Harrell is a little bit more of a dual threat where he can do different things with his feet. Grayson Loftus is not that way. You have to do some different things to help him and aid the run game. Zach Wilkie is probably a blend of the two. He's really good feet and the ability to go to throw from the pocket. Kind of got a three-headed monster that way. The good thing is mentally we can challenge them all. Now, as I mentioned, right, the dual threat quarterback has been a monster under Tim Albin and this system over the years, right? And so I think it's very interesting that when highlighting the differences between these three quarterbacks, the thing that is most prevalent is the fact that Harrell has that dual threat ability. He's also the first name out of Todd Finch's mouth here. So that kind of gives me or leads me to believe that Harrell probably has a little bit of a lead here. I personally doubt they go with Loftus. I really don't think that Loftus really fits what they're trying to do on offense, at least not the offenses that we've seen the last couple of years. So I'm personally willing to put my stake down here. I'm willing to take shots on Harrell in drafts here. I'll probably pick him up in upcoming draft or two here late. I'm debuting him at QB 53 in my rankings, and I personally think he has plenty of room to move up if he kind of solidifies this quarterback battle sooner rather than later, because, again, these dual-threat quarterbacks under Tim Albin have been fantastic. So the other quarterback battle to really kind of take note of here is the North Texas one. Like I said at the start of this quarterback discussion, we already kind of knew this was a system to really be on the watch out for coming into the season. You know, Reese Poffenbarger, the former Albany quarterback, former Miami backup quarterback over there, he is now with North Texas, and then he's battling out, of course, Drew Mestemaker, who, you know, I don't think anybody was really paying much attention to until he went and had himself a phenomenal bowl game, and suddenly this became a lot more interesting of a battle. But as we have learned here from Ethan Plinsky over at Mean Green 247, he did a fantastic job writing down these practice notes, as well as getting some quotes here from offensive coordinator Jordan Davis. But he noted that Poffenbarger did start with the first team, you know, complete about 10 of 15 passes, including a 6-yard touchdown run. Mestemaker was playing with the second team. I think this is pretty huge news, right? Like, this is going to warrant a pretty big bump up in the rankings for me. I had Poffenbarger at QB 53, ironically, where I now have Connor Harrell. With him kind of getting these first team reps pretty early on, I might add, usually you would see the guy who's been with the team already, who knows the system, he's probably going to get that first shot at being QB1. No, they've already handed this off to Poffenbarger. I personally think that means that Poffenbarger is going to not run away with this job per se, but I think it's going to be hard for Mestemaker to make up that ground in that case. So I had Poffenbarger at 53. I think he's going to settle in around QB 29 for me. And again, much like Harrell, I think there's even room to move up there if we get more and more clarity that he is going to clearly be the guy. Because that Eric Morris system was phenomenal for Chandler Morris last year. It was great or good at times for Cam Ward. And so I think that this is definitely a quarterback battle that is warranting a change in rankings here. So, Poffenbarger to the moon. Let's talk about some running back news. And of course, that means we're going to start with a wide receiver who's converting to running back. And that is probably pretty decent news. I've actually had a couple people reach out to me recently. It's funny how you guys seem to all have these thoughts around the same time, where people are asking me in these drafts, like, who's the next Breshard Smith, right? Who's the next, you know, Avery Morrow, these semi-cheat codes. You know, it's nothing quite like, you know, CJ Donaldson playing tight end or anything like that, but, you know, these maybe former wide receivers converting to running back that'll get plenty of reception work and rushes as well. Well, it seems like we got a big one here with Adam Randall, the former four-star wide receiver, changing positions here. It looks like he's going to take a shot at running back. He's put on some weight, moving to running back, like I said, after, you know, basically losing out on his starting gig for wide receiver, right? It's Antonio Williams, Bryant Wesco, and TJ Moore. Those are your three starting wide receivers for Clemson. Clemson had a pretty big hole at running back. Adam Randall was already a pretty big dude, and they said, hey, let's give this a shot. Well, we got a little bit of it in the playoff game versus Texas. Adam Randall had 4 carries for 44 yards, so averaging 11 yards per carry is pretty solid. So lots of good stuff coming from him. Out of the spring reports, it sounds like Randall's making the transition to running back pretty darn well here. I haven't seen a lot of beat reporters make that extra step to say that Randall will be the RB1. The writers at 247 seem to be pretty insistent that freshman Givian Davidson will lead the team in carries, which is kind of weird because Dabo's not really known for playing freshmen all that much, and so I think that's kind of a pretty big jump in conclusion on their part, especially if they are trying to train up Adam Randall at running back. I personally think that I'm willing to take the shot on Randall, especially if he keeps his wide receiver eligibility on Fantrax. I think that makes him super intriguing. And here's the other thing. I went back and looked just to kind of see where Clemson running backs finish in terms of their like running back ranking, but also like take those fantasy points and put them among wide receivers and where do they finish there, right? So in 2024, Phil Maffa would have been RB42 in total points. He would have been wide receiver 30 in total fantasy points. So that's a pretty solid jump. 2023, there wasn't much difference. Phil Maffa finished as the RB48. He would have finished as wide receiver 43, excuse me. And then 2022 was kind of the big one, right? Will Shipley finishing with 227.5 PPR points. That would have been good for RB19, and that would have been good for wide receiver 5 that year. So if Adam Randall somehow managed to get a Will Shipley-like workload in 2022, right, yeah, you could be absolutely looking at a cheat code of the wide receiver position, especially in a year where there isn't much to really be gleaned on in terms of known production for wide receivers. So I'm absolutely intrigued by Adam Randall. I grabbed him in this recent draft that I'm in. Again, I drafted him 11th round because, again, that potential cheat code's there. It could end up coming back to bite me in the butt so badly. I don't know. Let's take a look at some other running back news. We'll go to another team here in the ACC here. And really just a team that I wanted to point out here. The thing's kind of flown under the radar. It flew under the radar for me. And quite frankly, I was kind of dumb in my initial rankings for not really having him very high. But Dalen Hollywood Smothers is being talked about as a true standout for NC State, right? Obviously, Robert Renee's out at offensive coordinator. They promote Roper to the offensive coordinator position. And what it seems like is that promotion is helping out Smothers greatly. We saw it at the end of last year. We're apparently going to see it again this year, where Roper was the quarterback's coach for the last two seasons for NC State. But before that, Roper was in charge of the running backs from 2020 to 2022. That made him the lead recruiter for Smothers. Again, a lot of this information coming from the great guys over at 247 Sports. They did a great job kind of catching some of these details. So clearly Roper and Smothers have a really good track record with each other. And you saw it at the end of last year. Once Anae was fired and Roper was promoted, suddenly you saw Smothers hit his stride towards the end, again, getting 17-plus carries in three of his last four games. You know, 3-plus targets in three of his last five games. Scoring 6 touchdowns in his last 5 games. Like, Smothers became a very clear part of the game plan for the Pack here. And because of that, I had to move him up. Now, granted, given how much things fall off after, like, the first, like, 15 running backs, it's pretty easy to move up in my running back rankings right now, but I managed to move Smothers up to my RB37. I think I need to be a bit more aggressive in acquiring him. I think that he'll be great for the NC State this upcoming year. They're not really locked into that Robert and A system that they've been trying to do the last 2 years. I think they run a bit more traditional approach this year, and that includes pounding the rock a lot more with Dalen Hollywood Smothers. So keep an eye out on him. Let's stay in the ACC one more time, and let's go talk about Syracuse. Obviously, last year was basically a dream for CFFers, right, in terms of tons of passing, one clear bell cow back, could not be better. We were kind of hoping that would be the same thing this year, but we did get some news here at the running back position, specifically directly from Jeff Nixon, the offensive coordinator there, and he specifically said that replacing LaQuint Allen will most likely be by committee. Now, again, that obviously will include guys like Yassine Willis, who I had pretty high in my rankings. I was pretty much expecting him to be the clear heir apparent to LaQuint Allen, but obviously that'll also include guys like Nixon's son, Will Nixon. Some other guys will be in the mix there. This obviously forces me to drop Willis down my rankings. I formerly had him top 15. That was probably too aggressive anyway. But like now I'm pushing him down to like the late 20s. And honestly, he could go even lower. I'm just having a hard time kind of letting go of it because I'm a pretty big fan of Yacine Willis, and I, you know, spent a lot of capital on him last year. So I'm like, fingers crossed that, you know, this is just coach speak, and Willis is a pretty solid all-around back, and he should be able to be the bell cow back should they need it. But obviously, I'm not the coach. I am not there in practice every day. They get to see exactly what they have, and they got to make decisions based off of that. A couple more running back stories here. One really big one. I probably should have led this one because this is honestly not a game changer per se, but like if you're dumb like me, you've been drafting Eli Sanders because you've kind of just immediately thought, oh, Lincoln Riley's transfer running backs, those have been his top guys the last couple of years. And then you completely miss the fact that not only did USC add Eli Sanders at running back, but they also added one Wayman Jordan at running back. For those of you who might not know who that is, Jordan was a JUCO transfer coming in from Hutchinson Community College, and he only, you know, rushed for 1,600 yards and 20 touchdowns last year. Now, granted, it's community college, but if you listen to the way that guys like Mark Culkin on Three are talking about him, and the way that some of these coaching sources are talking about him, just listen to this. Again, Mark Culkin at On3 writes from a source here. Wait, quote, Wayman is an amazing running back, and he will likely be the feature back. Continuing the quote, he says, he gives off Ashton GNT vibes. He is not only a power back, but he's also making guys miss left and right. And this source would go on to say, quote, the competition at running back isn't really close, but I'm sure this will be obvious to everyone. So, yeah, this is kind of me ringing the alarm bells here that Wayman Jordan's your guy at USC. Just based on development so far, he's clearly the guy. He is your, you know, Jaquavius Marks of this year. If you've been drafting Eli Sanders like me, got to change that right now. I got to go into my rankings right now. Wherever I got Eli Sanders, I will be switching him out for Wayman Jordan. That is just as simple as a switch I think you can make. I mean, Eli Sanders is battling it out from what it sounds like with Brian Jackson for that RB2 job. He's probably closer to him than he is to Wayman Jordan here. So yeah, make your switches out there. Last running back story here. Kind of similar to the Clemson story where we got a former wide receiver transitioning to running back. And this is where things kind of caught off guard for me here because, you know, at Liberty, we know for a fact, you know, they're missing Quentin Cooley. They have, Billy Lucas. Billy Lucas and Quentin Cooley are both gone. I personally thought that meant that Von Blue was going to step in here, right? Because if I remember correctly, let me just double check myself here. Von Blue, if I remember correctly, was the third running back in terms of carries last year. Now, granted, he didn't have a ton, but, you know, 35 carries, 205 yards, almost 6 yards per carry. That's pretty solid. I thought with Billy Lucas and Quentin Cooley gone, he'd be the clear next guy up, but not according to our friends over at seaofred.com, where they gave themselves a projected depth chart here following the spring, and they had former wide receiver Juju Gray as the starting A back for Liberty, and they had Von Blue as an OR backup with Darius Copeland. I just found this very interesting all around. Obviously, just like Adam Randall, if Juju Lewis retains that wide receiver eligibility and he's the lead back for Liberty, which, you know, given Quentin Cooley last year and the year before, right, you know, 1,200-yard campaign last year, 1,400-yard campaign the year before, I'm not saying that that's what Juju Gray is going to do, but, you know, if that ceiling possibility's in there, then Gray having that wide receiver eligibility could turn him into a cheat code. My personal feel on this is, given the fact that Von Blue, who was the clear RB3 last year, is being now listed as a backup, I think that this is going to end up being a very committee-ish kind of situation. I highly doubt we see anybody hit the Quentin Cooley levels of a 200-plus carry. I guess it really has a lot to do with how much they run Ethan Vasco at quarterback, right? Because, you know, with Kenton Salter getting over 100 carries each of the last 2 years, that very much ate into the possibility, or yeah, the possibility of there being a second running back kind of emerging for this team. Maybe with Vasco, they run the ball less with the quarterback, and maybe that opens up opportunity for both Gray and Blue to be major guys. But again, I'm not holding my breath here. I think Gray's an intriguing guy to grab just because of that tree code nature at the end of drafts, but I'm not actively seeking him out. I'm not putting him in my rankings right now. I'm personally of the opinion where I'm just taking all Liberty running backs out unless I get full confirmation that, you know, a guy like Juju Gray or Von Blue are breaking away from the pack. Let's finish up with some wide receivers. We got all sorts of things here. Mostly going to be taking a look at G5 teams and a lot of Mountain West teams here. Well, Mountain West and Florida teams. We got two of each. I guess it's not really a main theme among these wide receiver rooms here, but I tried my hardest. Let's go to Colorado State, right? And the big news here is that Lewis Brown IV, who was coming back to Colorado State after a year stint with San Diego State. I was excited about this considering that, you know, Colorado State was struggling last year. They took a pretty major step back between 2023 and 2024. In 2023, they were 17th in the country in passing yards. Last year, they went down to 69th, and I think a lot of this had to do with the fact that, you know, they didn't have Torrey Horton healthy. He only played 5 games last year, and then the rest of this receiving room just really did not step up in the wake of his absence. Obviously, like I said, Brown was off at San Diego State. He was coming back. I was hoping he would be the clear number one guy for this offense, but now he has been dismissed from the program for off-the-field issues. And so, in my opinion, that sucks because this now leaves Colorado State without a pretty clear guy to target. And it makes me wonder exactly just how cooked Colorado State will be this year. Are we thinking medium? Are we thinking medium well? Or are we thinking Lincoln Riley brisket? Almost had that joke nailed and messed it up at the end. It's all good. Lincoln Riley biscuits, I imagine, are not as good or just as bad as his briskets. This is what I get for recording at 10 o'clock at night. But you might be asking, right? Like, Jerry, let's be optimistic here, right? Let's say Colorado State does get back on track this year. Let's say, you know, we get back to the Jay Norvell offenses of old, you know, during his time at Nevada and stuff like that. Is there a guy still here to target? I think there's a lot of guys to target here and not a lot of guys worth drafting. They bring back Amari Winfield and Jordan Ross. Those are the two guys that stand out among the returners. Two guys we've liked in the past. Winfield even led the team in targets last year. The problem is it was one, nowhere close to the monstrous load that Torrey Horton and others have gotten from Norvell in the past. Two, Winfield just wasn't very impressive when he did get the ball last year, so I don't think he really earned more targets last year to be going into this year. Jordan Ross is still somebody I'm slightly interested in, right? Like, he led the team in yards per route run outside of Torrey Horton last year at 2.12. It's a pretty solid indicator that he could have some untapped potential moving forward, but, you know, I thought we would see that last year. There's a pretty big opportunity for him to do that last year, and we just didn't see that. And then some other guys that really kind of stand out here is, you know, guys to keep an eye on. CFF Insiders points out on Twitter that a common name in a lot of practice reports has been LaVon Brown, so definitely a name to keep an eye out for there. You also had Stephon Daly, who led the team in receptions during the bowl game. And then you also have Colorado State bringing in four-star receiver Kojo Antwi joining the room. Again, a lot of guys, like, they all have their claim. They have their, I guess, claim to fame. I guess they have their case to be made here for them potentially being the wide receiver one, but, like, none of them really stand out to the point that I think are worth drafting. The only guy that I think is kind of worth drafting is FIU tight end transfer Rocky Beers, just because I love Norvell tight ends, right? That is a system that has produced really good tight ends. And based on reactions from guys like DNVR Rams on Twitter, they seem pretty solidified on the fact that Rocky Beers will be pretty big for the Rams this year. Again, am I thinking a Dallin Holker level? Probably not, but will I be adding Rocky Beers into my rankings and my tight ends? Absolutely. Let's move on to another Mountain West team. Let's take a look at Hawaii. Obviously, we've talked already a lot about Pafele Ashlock and Nicholas Senegal. All right. They have been, you know, been drafted pretty highly. But I think if you're looking for another option in this Hawaii offense, if you're just dying to get a part of this, right, if you are one of those people that, you know, think Micah Alejandro has the, you know, QB1 upside potentially for CFF here, right, there's a possibility there could be a third wide receiver option here. Now, I'm not saying there's going to be three wide receivers that are CFF relevant in Hawaii, but I think, you know, between Ashlock and Senegal, there's a possibility that there's another option here that could make its way into that top two options, and that name has been Jackson Harris. He has been a standout at Hawaii practices, according to Spectrum Local News there in Hawaii. Like I said, if you don't like the value that Ashlock and Senegal are going at in drafts, maybe take a shot on Harris later in drafts, right? We have seen quite a bit from him already this spring. And an interesting note directly from Micah Alejandro himself is that, quote, Harris has been making plays the whole spring and is going to show in August. Continuing the quote, I'd say it's the biggest steal out of the portal for us this year. Now, granted, Alejandro's biased. He's going to love the fact that he's got a new receiver to play with. But Harris does bring a new, he does kind of bring a new skill set here that, you know, guys like Ashlock and Senegal don't really play. Obviously, Senegal and Ashlock are inside guys. Harris is definitively an outside guy here, you know, being over 6 foot. Actually, he might be 6 foot five. I can't remember if he's 6 foot three or 6 foot five. Let's see if I can look this up real quick. Jackson Harris, what do you got for me, buddy? He's 6 foot three. But even so, that's pretty tall for Mountain West wide receiver here, right? And so you might also be thinking, like, well, Jared, like, you know, it's the slot wide receivers that we really want in this run and shoot system. They've been the ones that have been great. Given what we saw from Mike Alejandro in his one start, now granted, again, this is one game, but it actually wasn't the slot guys that led in targets. It was Jonah Pinoke, who got 11 targets in the game against New Mexico with Alejandro under center. Like I said, one game sample size, but just something worth keeping an eye on. I do think Harris is absolutely worth a grab at the end of drafts, right? I don't know how long his value will stay there, especially if he keeps getting glowing reviews like he's getting in practice, but we'll definitely see. All right, let's finish up with a couple of Florida schools here, and we'll start with FAU, and you might be sitting here thinking like, okay, Jared, yeah, we know about Easton Messer, we know about Caden Veltkamp, and I'm here to say we got another one for you guys to talk about, and that is Mr. Junior Wilson, J.R. Wilson. I don't know if it's Junior or J.R. Wilson. He's also Sean Wilson. You will find him as Sean Wilson in Fantrax, so good luck sorting out that name. But we've seen Zach Kittley have success with both a slot receiver and an outside wide receiver in the past at the G5 level, particularly back in that magical 2021 season between Jarrett Stearns and Mitchell Tinsley. Normally, I'd just be pretty dismissive and target Messer in the slot and just kind of leave it as B to see if a outside wide receiver emerged during the season. But if you read all the FAU camp reports, right, like Wilson is getting a ton of rave reviews from spring camp. And particularly, he's being talked about as not only a standout on the field, but just a standout as a leader for this team, which tells me that that's going to be a guy that is going to earn lots of opportunities from the staff, earn lots of opportunities from his quarterback, right? So I definitely think it's something to keep an eye on for. I think Messer's still your prize here, but Wilson's absolutely worth a grab in the last quarter of your 30-round draft. I've got him debuting at wide receiver 64 in my rankings. I'll definitely be taking some shots on Sean Wilson here later in the drafts just for the possibility of getting that Mitchell Tinsley upside. Could very well be end up being a 500-600-yard wide receiver, but given the fact that we don't have a lot coming back this year, you got to shoot for upside. Speaking of upside, the last team that I will leave you guys with is some names to watch at Florida International. Again, another team that's kind of flown under the radar here over the last several, or really since in this offseason. I don't think I've seen really any FIU players being drafted, and honestly, for good reason. They're not a great team. They got a new head coach, Willie Simmons. They got a new offensive coordinator, Nick Coleman. It's kind of difficult to really know what they'll have as a system. Willie Simmons' numbers weren't great at Florida A&M. Nick Coleman has not really called plays before. He was a quarterback's coach at UAB for a couple of years. So system-wise, not really sure what to expect. But what we do have is Kayon Jenkins is still QB1 here, right? And so his tendencies, regardless of what kind of system comes in here, may carry over from years past. And those tendencies tend to be him targeting the hell out of his two outside wide receivers, right? We saw last year with Eric Rivers, 97 targets, 1,166 yards and 12 touchdowns. Dean Patterson was no slouch, 86 targets, 692 yards, 7 touchdowns. Year before that, Chris Mitchell, 100 targets, 1,118 yards, 7 touchdowns, right? Like, Kayon Jenkins loves him an outside deep threat, right? That's pretty much the only thing that really works for him and FIU at times. And so, the two names that beat writers, especially over at Sports Illustrated, have told us to keep an eye on are, one, Juju Lewis, who tore his ACL early last season. He is out for the spring, but he is expected to be a pretty big contributor for FIU. Now, granted, I'm a little hesitant to really buy into him, like I said, because he's out for spring. We'll see how that kind of goes in the fall. And then the other name to really watch out for is Hawaii transfer Alex Perry, who definitely had a rough last couple of years with the Rainbow Warriors, but now seems to be the standout option for the Panthers this spring, especially with this 6'5". This is who was 6'5". Alex Perry was 6'5". That's what I was thinking of when we were talking about Jackson Harris. But yeah, Alex Perry, 6'5". He'll be able to perform pretty well in the this is FIU is CUSA. Yes. He'll be able to perform pretty well in the CUSA here. In terms of the guy I'd have to target, I want to say Alex Perry, but like the fact that he struggled to get over 9 yards per catch last year, Hawaii, his high was 11.4 yards per reception 2023. It doesn't really strike me as like the explosiveness you need to reach the heights of like a Chris Mitchell or an Eric Rivers. My thing is, like, I want to believe in Juju Lewis, right? Because if you look at what he's done over the last couple of years, or what he did last year, you know, 2.45 yards per route run, that's pretty solid for a G5 wide receiver. Lewis had limited run, but he averaged almost 16.8 yards per catch last year. If he can return from his ACL tear, you know, sooner rather than later and kind of regain some of that explosiveness, I want to believe in him, but again, that ACL tear really kind of puts a damper on everything. But just a couple of names to watch out there for at FIU. I think there's a pretty solid chance that we could see another 100-target wide receiver there and them just continuing kind of what they did the last couple of years, even though it is a new coaching system there. So we'll see. Maybe my brain's just getting too fried late at night here. So, all that being said, that's pretty much all I got for spring news and everything like that. Obviously, there's so much more that I could have talked about. There's all different kinds of coaching quotes and everything, but those were the teams and the storylines and the notes that I caught on that I thought were the most interesting, that I thought you guys would be the most interested in. So if you guys got spring news and stuff like that that you find interesting, feel free to DM it to me. I'm always interested in reading more articles, because again, I'm one man, I can't read all of them. So if you have one that you think I haven't touched on yet that you think's interesting, send it on over to me. But with that, appreciate all of you guys listening, but we have come to the end of the show. Again, thank you guys for listening. If you have not already, make sure you leave a like, a comment, and subscribe if you're watching this on YouTube. If you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show, leave a 5-star review wherever you can. Make sure you guys check out the rest of the Campus of Canton Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. We'll see you guys back here on Monday with a regularly scheduled program. Until then, really appreciate you guys and hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.